The expression "hearts in his eyes" is meant to be figurative, but if you've set foot in pretty much any store for the last couple of weeks, it's literal at the moment, because it is St. Valentine's Day, the day that sales of flowers and chocolate and any food shaped roughly like a heart takes off. We celebrate our sweethearts, and if we don't have them, we look for them for a while before today. Our next guest keeps an eye on love and dating in the world today for personal interest and for study purposes. Skylar Wang is a sociologist and PhD candidate at the University of California, Berkeley. He knows much about the pursuit of love in the world today. Skylar, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I just saw the term cuffing season yesterday, from late December to Valentine's Day. Is that a term you're familiar with?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's basically the period of time right before Valentine's Day where people are somewhat in a rush to, you know, get hitched or find a partner so that they can go on a date, you know, on Valentine's Day.
Cuffing, does that imply attaching yourself to someone? There's nothing more sinister than that, I hope.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's just, you know, the desire to not be alone on Valentine's Day.
But it's interesting that people still go in for Valentine's Day in such a way. And I'll tell you something. In recent years, I've noticed such a broad range of attitudes from people who post Facebook pictures of people vomiting up hearts to people who really just go all in on it. It seems like we have quite a mixed feeling about it, depending on our own relationship status.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Valentine's Day very much is still a cultural legacy. I think, you know, there are people who are somewhat against the idea because, you know, it creates a lot of pressure for single people, and hence, which is why you have these alternative holidays such as, you know, Single Awareness Day or Friendship Day in replacement of Valentine's Day, just to draw awareness that, you know, you don't need to be in a relationship to be happy.
So I'm curious about making an academic study of love and any potential pitfalls there are there. How did you decide on this as a field for your work in sociology?
That's a great question. So I started doing a lot of online dating during my undergraduate days back in Vancouver. And, you know, I just thought that it's such a sociological, such a sociologically important topic, especially in, you know, the younger generations where this is all we know. This is how we meet people nowadays. And so I decided to put a class together, a little seminar at UBC, which is where I went. And, you know, I just thought it'd be interesting to gather a bunch of students who are also interested in the topic to basically, you know, talk about it and to share our experiences in an academic setting. And that just kind of, you know, expanded into my research agenda right now.
I can imagine it's fraught with some potential pitfalls. I mean, you're not just talking about something that is removed from the people in the class, like talking about history or the classics or something. This is something that they're actually having in their own lives at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, this because online dating is such a fast-changing enterprise, I think there's a lot of really interesting new research that could arise from it. And I think, you know, sociologists and a lot of social scientists have only recently started to unpack its nuances.
So about online dating itself, I mean, is there pretty much a birth year that is a cutoff that if you were born after that time, you've really never known anything but?
So that's debatable. So some people consider the very early days of, you know, telephone dating, for example, as an example of online dating. So in terms of the specific time period in which, you know, online dating really emerged and started dominating the romantic scene, that's still pretty much a debate. But then if you really want to talk about, you know, what online dating has taken shape, I think it's basically, I would say after the 90s, you have these forums and you have these personals that people can post online. And that's where, you know, people started recognizing that this new way to meet people. Before that, what, you know, tends to happen is that people just meet individuals within their neighborhoods, right, from a few blocks away. So there's a study, you know, that looks at romantic matching in the 30s in Philadelphia, where about 30% of all marriages and relationships happen between people who live within two blocks away from each other. And now that's clearly not the case.
Is there still some sort of a limit on geographical scope, 5 miles, 10 miles, anything like that?
You mean right now?
Yeah.
That's hard to say. I haven't really seen any research that puts a specific number to that. But definitely people are dating outside of their communities and outside of their neighborhoods for sure.
We're spending part of this Valentine's Day with Skylar Wang, a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of California, Berkeley. As you've heard him mention, he got his undergraduate work and his work up to this point at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. You can join us as we talk about dating and online dating and all the things that have changed in the world of dating and maybe some of the things that have changed or not changed at all. Join us at 800-838-3760 to share your story by phone or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Skylar, from your perception, is there a greater churn now? I mean, do people feel like they have more choices in an age in which it's not just dating online, but also through apps that you can just, basically use thumb and forefinger on your phone and go through a whole bunch of people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of choice, it has definitely expanded, the repertoire of people that we can encounter. The idea is that, you're no longer bound by your geographical location, right? There's really good research that came out recently that says that Americans are dating people across race, across genders, across socioeconomic class because of online dating. Because, you basically have access to people, within 20, 30, 40 miles of radius, which is something that people do not have before. And so, definitely. And the thing is that everyone is doing online dating. And so in order to increase your chances of meeting someone, everyone's just basically jumped on the platforms now. So definitely, I think it has increased the number of people that are in terms of how many people you are exposed to on a daily basis for a lot of people.
We recently talked to a dating coach who works with people on online dating strategies and performance, and which raises the question about whether people really do sort of take a PR approach to this and amp up their good qualities and forget about the bad ones, perhaps, to a level of untruthfulness. Does it get to that point a lot, do you think, from what you've studied?
Yeah, so the thing about that is that I think that's just how people self-represent, I think. Even outside of online dating, I think people tend to portray, the more attractive and better side. But then you do see a certain level of deception that does happen a lot on online dating. So, for example, people choosing pictures that really flatter themselves, and maybe, there's some Photoshop action going on too. So there's a bit of that for sure. But I think, in our day-to-day lives, we choose to represent sides that are flattering, that are more attractive anyways. And so I think, it's not very different.
It's kind of like putting on makeup electronically, in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I read your piece, Skylar, at Queer Voices about studying love sociologically, and you write that despite the advantages of the moment with all the technological gains in dating, that the road to finding romance has never been more isolating. That's a really interesting statement.
Yeah, I think because of the fact that everyone's doing online dating and, online dating has taken over how people meet and how people interact with each other. I think there's this sense of urgency that, if I want to find a partner, I should just turn to this platform. But then no one talks about what happens when you can't. No one talks about what happens when you're unable to find a match. And basically individuals are starting to take a lot of blame for that. And so there's this double-edged sword situation that's going on. Now we have more access, but then people are so unclear about how to take advantage of that access. And so there's a lot of individual responsibility to know that just because the options out there doesn't mean that you have to use it, and it doesn't mean that you will definitely find success.
So is the pressure greater then because there are greater choices?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? Because now with the idea that, you can find anyone, you can find a vast, diverse pool of candidates, why is it that you still can't find a suitable one for yourself? Like, is there something wrong with you? I think a lot of people tend to go down that path.
Skylar Wang, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, sociologist, PhD candidate at UC Berkeley. We're talking about love and dating in the world today. You're welcome to join us by phone or email, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious because we do live in an area that has a lot of rural areas and smaller cities. I mean, there's no gigantic metropolitan area. Even Eugene wouldn't count in that. In that that level, is there any difference in the way that people approach dating, particularly online dating, in smaller towns?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing about dating in rural America is that because, you know, the communities tend to be smaller, people are more connected. I think a lot of online daters tend to be more careful and tend to be more sensitive towards how they engage in online interactions with other people. Because the idea is that, you know, you meet this person, but then the next day, you know, you may bump into them in Walmart or the local bar, right? And so there's a lot of, you know, chatting going on. You know, your stories, your relationship history is more transparent. And so you don't want to be a jerk, right? And so that's very different from people living in the cities where, you know, you go on one bad day, you probably never see the person again, right? So there's more risk involved. There's more risk to your social capital when you date in a rural part of town. And also, I think, you know, I've spoken to people who are from rural regions. One of the most difficult things, especially for queer people, actually, is that it's just almost impossible to find people. They have to really relax their criteria or relax their distance radius just to get, you know, 20 to 35 profiles. Whereas in the city, you know, the swiping or the number of profiles are pretty much limitless. And so that's definitely, you know, one of the biggest differences between rural and urban dating.
Are there still fears for somebody who is LGBTQ in a rural area for even getting into online dating based on societal circumstances and reactions?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think, you know, online dating has allowed, you know, a lot of closeted LGBT individuals to be a little more honest about their sexuality. Just because, you know, maybe the circumstances in real life, you know, do not allow them to be. So they can afford to be more honest when they do online dating. And the idea is that, you know, when you indicate on your profile that you're queer or gay or whatnot, you know, you're very much going to find other people who identify as queer. So it's pretty much, I think, a safe space for a lot of rural Americans. And so I think, you know, online dating has really helped a lot of maybe potentially closeted Americans into finding or exploring their sexuality.
Because of some of the concerns you expressed earlier, though, about the fact that you could run into somebody that you're online dating with in a rural area a little more easily than you could in an urban area, perhaps. I mean, is there a less participation in rural areas? Do you have any numbers on that?
So the thing about sociological research on online dating is that most of it has been taking place in urban areas. There's really very little research for rural areas. So we don't have those numbers. But I think there is a growing market in rural America. And there has been, you know, success stories. And I think online dating corporations have been very strategically catering and tailoring their services to people who live in rural America. And you can look for websites that target specific demographics. For example, there's a website called Farmers Only, where, you know, a lot of rural Americans actually meet their romantic interests through. And so if you want to get specific, you really can.
Farmers Only, you said, is the name of the site?
Yeah.
I love this term you've coined, relationship shopping. I gather is not really a compliment, though, is it, Skylar?
No, so that's the opposite of relationship shopping, right? So relationship shopping is the idea that you find your next partner, like if you're shopping for the right dress or the right bag, right? So you're looking for the right one. Whereas for relationshiping, it's, you know, making someone the right one. So there's a lot more compromise, right? You're not just looking for physical attributes. You're really giving it time to nurture. You're spending time to get to know someone. So those two are very distinctive ideologies in online dating.
In fact, you mentioned that some of the people who do relation shopping use spreadsheets. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the whole quantified self movement where, you know, you want to track, you want to quantify, you want to be able to predict. So, you know, people who go on a lot of dates use Excel spreadsheets to just, you know, get a sense of what they have been doing and what they like. And I imagine that's more of an issue for people who live in the urban areas.
Interesting. So it's good checking off the attributes there. But before we go, Tyler, we just got about a minute left here. For those of us who've never used online dating, I mean, you mentioned 35 to 40 profiles. Is that the usual batch you're going to get if you look on Tinder or Match.com or any of those?
Yeah, so it really depends on, you know, your geographical location. I would say, you know, especially if you're living in a rural part of town, it's best to have your distance radius set to the maximum so that you can have the maximum exposure to different people. And try to use different websites because on average, people use about 2 to 3 different apps or different websites anyways. You just want to maximize your exposure to the online dating community. Yeah.
All right. All kinds of stuff to be learned in studying love and dating, as Skylar Wang does in his work as a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of California, Berkeley. I'd love to look at a course list sometime, Skylar. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.